This segment brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. And this segment is also brought to you by Ford. Tune in every Monday to Built Ford Tough Bears Monday, brought to you by your local Ford stores. We're waiting for Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports.
Game three tonight between the Yankees and the Houston Astros.
How about that Verlander game?
Dude, this is why I picked the Astros at the beginning of the playoffs, because they have needed exactly this for like 2 years. This is exactly the guy they've needed, and that guy rises to the occasion and was just remarkable.
Did he finish with 13 strikeouts?
13 strikeouts, yeah. 124 pitches. They didn't score the winning run until the bottom of the ninth, so he had just gone nine, but he struck out the side in the eighth, and then, you know, there was not even a conversation with A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch didn't even walk over to him and say, do you want the ninth? Yeah, no, that's mine. Thanks.
Yeah.
These guys, he's the Nolan Ryan of his generation and has been for quite some time.
Yeah, he said on Twitter, you know, it was cool to pitch in front of his hero, Nolan Ryan. And he, you know, obviously, like you said, he's not quite Nolan Ryan in terms of the workload and all of that, but it's a fair comp.
He's as close as this generation has gotten. And the fact that he is still that guy after years of reported decay and expected decline is just amazing. And you know why the Cubs wanted him so bad? You know why it came down to the Cubs and Astros chasing like crazy? I knew that guy would rise to the moment. He was brilliant down the stretch, and then that was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was the reason that people wanted him, you at the top of the list, was 2 years of control and a belief that he would get there in the big games. They had already given up all their prospects for Quintana.
Yep.
And they have an extra year of Quintana control and at less money.
At much less money.
So, I mean, and much younger.
They wish they had more.
Yeah, if they would have had more, they would have been able to put together a better package for Justin Verlander, who supposedly wanted to come here over Houston. So, you know, you have to watch that and wonder, I guess, what could have been. But we talked about it the day after the trade went down. You can't get everyone.
No, you can't. And they were chasing him and talking with the Tigers, hell, even before the year began, you know, trying to get him here. And just the Astros get it done. And now, but look, the Cubs, you come back, you're down 2-0, but you've got Hendricks and Arrieta. Let's go.
You know, right,
you've got your shot.
Home field has held serve so far. You're not out of it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't hit, and you didn't hit at home in the division series either, if you don't hit, you're going to lose, because they do have a better bullpen, right? Like, you have to get a lead early. That was the thing about about game one. You got Kershaw out early. You were neutral through Kershaw. You got to him, and then you couldn't capitalize because it's relentless with them with how good their bullpen is.
Dave Roberts is just awfully, awfully good in terms of managing his bullpen. But it's also, you know, makes life easy when they get out 24 of the 25 guys they face.
Right, like that's the thing. And again, Joe Maddon deserves criticism, and we have given it to him, and we will question him tomorrow at noon and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did afternoons on the home of the Royals in Kansas City to a town and a populace who was convinced that Ned Yost was a good bullpen manager. But, like, when you have Kelvin Herrera, Wade Davis, and
sure,
Greg Holland,
we'd all like to have those options.
I would be a good bullpen manager. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't need to be conventional or, like, you know. So, yes, Roberts should get credit for not being willing to let his starters go through the Cubs lineup a third time. But he's got four options in his bullpen that he loves.
You know, something that we haven't even mentioned got me even angrier to not see Wade Davis when I realized it anew this morning. Somehow, I was sitting there thinking that I wanted him anyway. They pinch hit for Kenley Jansen. When Buck Farmer comes up, Buck Farmer, which is a sweet-ass name.
It's a great baseball name.
The third catcher comes up to pinch hit. He's pinch hitting for Jansen, which means that if you survive the ninth and you get to the 10th, you have successfully made it to the post-Kenley Jansen portion of their bullpen.
Right.
So give yourself a shot. So throw Davis. That's the moment to not lose, as we have been discussing, especially because Jansen is gone. When you see Buck Farmer's up there, okay, all right, here we go. Because, you know, my God, if they had done it, and then you get...
Do you want Davis starting that inning, though? Because I think that is an interesting argument to me, that if Wade Davis can only get up once, you don't bring him in mid-inning because you'd rather have – if Wade Davis only has the ability to get up and get into the game one time because he's still recovering from seven outs in game five, then you've got to have him be there for three outs. It can't be a mid-inning proposition. I actually do think that there is some credence to that argument.
That you can't have him get one out and then a couple more outs?
Well, because sitting down and getting back up is tough. I mean, we talked about it before game
I
one
know, we
that
don't...
Wade Davis was going to be limited after that. That was a very – I mean
– Yeah, but this is 2 days. This is two days.
And he's clearly healthy. He was up and able to come in at some point. He's clearly healthy.
It is just like last year with a free agent closer to be. You use him and, you know, sap him dry. You've got another off day looming. If he tells you can get three outs and all of a sudden you realize you might need four outs, ask him to get four outs. Or at least just win the freaking game. Win the inning. Get to the post Kenley Jansen portion of the bullpen. Let's say he only uses Wade for two outs. Right there.
Right, because right? I think that is okay. My guess is that that entered Joe's framework.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you know that, if you know you've only got one inning and he decided to wait for the save situation, if you use him there and you get through the ninth and they pinch hit for Jansen, then, yeah, you have to close with Lackey. I'd rather have that.
Lackey gets to start clean innings.
Yeah.
Right? Lackey gets to come in the 10th and just start the inning as opposed to coming in as a starter mid-inning.
Or you've now gotten to Lackey and he'll go as long as you need. He'll go the next five innings if you stay scoreless or whatever. But get past the moment. It's a very tricky thing. These managers have to figure out when to use the closer on the road. You know, it's just get past Jansen, and they had their chance to do so last night.
312-644-6767. Jeff Passan is big-timing us. I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point. Phil in Downers Grove is on the score. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, guys. A few things I just wanted to mention. First of all, I don't particularly blame Joe Maddon. I know you guys have a poll going on. I mean, I honestly believe it. You know, when teams win, sometimes the managers get too much credit, and when they lose, they get too much blame. I mean, I think it's pretty evident the reason the Cubs are behind right now is the bullpen has underperformed, and I think they've underperformed because they're not throwing strikes. I mean, right now, so far in this series, the Dodgers have drawn 13 walks, the Cubs have drawn two. And the offense has sputtered, I think, just for the opposite. They're getting themselves out. You know, even great hitters, you know, you swing at balls out of the zone, you're not going to be successful. As far as, I think the starting pitching has been great. The defense has been good. You know, and we talk about that decision. I don't know how many of you watched the Yankees-Astros game the other day. Same exact situation. Girardi puts in Chapman, and guess what happens? They lose the ball game. So, again, I think one thing I would do moving forward is I would move Bryant to third and Rizzo to fourth in the lineup, try and get a couple guys up there maybe who could get on base. But, you know, I think if they don't, again, you know, the walks are a big thing. You know, we've given up 38 walks so far in the postseason. That's over five a game. You know, in the long run, you're just not going to win that way.
Yeah, listen, there's no question about that part. The one thing, though, they're not going to change that. Someone asked earlier, like, when do you consider moving Chris Bryant down in the lineup? The answer's never.
Never.
It's not this season. He can go 0-for-5 with five strikeouts in game three. He's going to bat second and play third base in game four.
Certainly, yeah. He's not going to get sat down at all.
Or moved down,
probably not. No. He could break out and go back to being Chris Bryant at any moment in the middle of an at-bat.
Did you see his quote? I saw John Greenberg tweet it out from The Athletic about we got to hit home runs. You know what I mean? Like it seems like in the postseason you got to rely on the home runs and it's tough to string hits together and all of that. And I think that is part of the problem. Him swinging for the fences every damn time, trying to hit home runs. But the Cubs, we talked about it all season, they rely and live and die on the home runs.
Who are the two best hitters in the postseason right now? If you look at both series, Justin Turner is one of them.
Yeah, he's been ridiculous.
Altuve, probably the other. Probably the other top name that comes to mind.
I mean, you could have made an argument before yesterday that Puig was the best player for the Dodgers, but sure.
Turner has been ridiculous, and Altuve has been ridiculous, and those guys do not swing and miss very much. In a massive strikeout era, the value of guys who will make contact. How about Turner's at bat before when he drives in the tying run with the with the ground ball to the right side. Just a beautiful little bit of hitting, and he makes contact. How many times have you watched a Justin Turner at bat in these two games, and he fouls off like nine pitches? Just he's a remarkable hitter.
You saw his stats like for his career in the postseason with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 13 for 18. It's just ridiculous. So, I mean, yeah, tough guy to get out.
Yeah.
Tough guy to get out. Who on the Cubs right now is even putting together consistently good at-bats?
John Jay? I like his at-bats.
Russell?
Yeah. Yeah, Russell putting together good at-bats and hitting the ball pretty hard. See, it's tricky because it's not just about pitches per plate appearance, because Ben Zobrist has chosen to ambush a couple of times.
But he's barreled it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zobrist more often than not has given you good at-bats.
Mm-hmm. This is an Ian Happ moment right here in game three, which means what? Which means that Baez sits and Zobrist plays left instead of Schwarber, and you sit Schwarber against Yu Darvish. You got the righty here.
Darvish 7 days rest. You're sitting Schwarber.
Or do you sit Hayward?
Yeah, I think
Jason
Hayward.
Okay, well, if you're going to do that, if you're going to make the sacrifice to try to get some freaking offense to happen, then I want Zobrist in right, Happ at second, and Schwarber in left.
Against the lefty?
Against the righty.
Yeah. Sorry, right, I was thinking Rich Hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that's the. I mean, that's what you're going to have to do.
These are the things that'll be discussed.
Well, it won't be Almora, even though he's put together good at bats, right? Almora's out of the calculus, but John Jay is probably penciled in.
John Jay leading
off in center field.
Lead off center field, John Jay.
And so then, yeah. So you just go the opposite of basically everyone that's been in there, because he's been riding and dying with Baez at second base.
Not against certain tough righties. Against Scherzer.
Right, not against Scherzer. That's the mm-hmm. that's the one in the playoffs, though, for the most part.
Yeah,
that's the one. So yeah, I think that how many at bats does Happ even have in this postseason? So I think that there might be some, like, he was like, all right, I'm going to finally let Almora hit a little bit against righties.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be a desperation thing. Okay, this is a guy that I haven't tried, like Rondon in game one. Like,
right.
Okay, I haven't tried him. He wasn't there in the DS. Now I'll put him in the CS to see if I can catch lightning in a bottle.
Honest question these days, which is better, Zobrist in right or Happ in right? Happ at second or Zobrist at second? I feel like Zobrist decay, and yet his veteran presence is... I mean, Happ is faster and runs better, so maybe you put Happ in right over Zobrist?
I think that you want your better defender in the infield, probably. That'd be my guess. So Happ at second, Zobrist in right.
There's no ideal moment. There's no ideal choice here. Because Baez has been brilliant defensively. Hayward had a great moment in defense the other night in game one. He made that run. Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Washington game. He made a running catch on Matt Wieters out there in right field.
He made some nice plays yesterday or the other day in right field. I mean, I do think, though, that it's at the point where, and Joe has said it, Joe's admitted to this, like sacrificing defense for offense early. But you could go a little bit more. He hasn't been as drastic with not having both Baez and Hayward, right? So this would be, if you went Schwarber, Happ, Zobrist, all of them playing. So now you've got no Hayward, no Almora, no Baez. That is a drastic offense for defense shift. But when you have, what?
Seven hits
and three runs in two games, if not now, when?
Mm.
11 runs in the six games outside of game five of the division series?
In this massive era of the strikeout, after the 2015 NLCS performance against the Mets, Jason Hayward was supposed to add contact. Lots of contact towards the top of the order.
Yeah, I don't like him at the plate.
No.
His
failures have been damaging offensively. He was had a hell of a speech, though, last year. And is a terrific defensive right fielder and a great veteran and a good dude, a strong leader in clubhouse presence, et cetera, et cetera. But here you are. Maybe it'll be Happ in center field and not John Jay. Maybe you sit John Jay and you can have Happ in center, Hayward in right. Right.
Yeah.
And Schwarber in left and Zobrist at second. I mean, you got to change some stuff up. You got to get guys in there who are going to make some contact against this another strikeout pitcher in Darvish.
I like John Jay, though. Like, he's the first name you said when he said giving good at bats. I don't know that that's the guy you go away from. I John Jay's been underappreciated all year. I think I stick with John Jay, and one of the big name guys has to just eat a little bit of humble pie for
all right. Well, maybe it's a couple, and maybe it's no Schwarber then in left, and it's right. John Jay in left and happen center.
Let's get to the Bears. Let's do some Bears stuff, man. We got McCullough at 11, and the Bears at least won, and the Cubs are depressing me for the moment. So how you guys are feeling while you're rooting for these games, the outcome while watching Mitch develop before your eyes in a tough spot. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's a great quote from Kendall Wright after the catch of the game on the play of the game from Mitch Trubisky saying, I don't know how normal that dude is.
Oh,
it's good stuff.
Awesome stuff. The context being he's talking about how they had the handcuffs on him all game long. From
only 16 pass attempts, right. Relying on Jordan Howard.
Don't put the ball in harm's way. We're not going to throw it that much anyway. And then that moment comes. Hey, dude, figure it out. Make a play. And I think that's the signature moment that I'll remember, because it's not a throw on the run, which is awesome, an awesome skill. But we know we've seen it's him buying time,
stepping up in the pocket
somehow. And because of the awkwardness of the moment, having to make the throw from the awkward body position, and he puts it up high where only Kendall Wright will get it.
Yeah.
And
it was on 3rd and 11 too. Like if they incomplete there, it's probably a 58 yard field goal attempt for Connor Barth. Who knows? I mean, probably try to kick it, almost certainly miss. You're now given the Ravens great field goal position. Like best case scenario there is a tie.
And there's
if you don't come in with that play.
Yep. There's Kendall Wright, who's been around just a little bit, tiny bit, had a few different quarterbacks in Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
And now a couple different quarterbacks here, and it says, all right, so yeah, we're asking you to just not lose the game for us, and then, oh, by the way, win the game for us right here. A normal quarterback might struggle, but Kendall Wright's not sure if Mitch Trubisky is normal.
I don't want to discount the touchdown throw to Deion Sims, though, either, because, yes, you're right on the run, and people were saying, oh, he was a little underthrown, or Sims was open immediately. The pressure came in instantly, and he was flushed out to the right. And Sims, to his credit, who was breaking open in the middle of the field on the busted coverage, then rolled back with his quarterback. But he had pressure right in his face. He rolled out right, also on 3rd down,
yep.
Lofting it in perfectly to Deion Sims there. That's a high-level throw, too, that shows improvisation. It shows touch. It shows accuracy, mobility, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought there were two great plays, and 8 of 16 for 113 yards. 6 of those 8 incompletions, based on my count, were throwaways.
And that is the attribute right there. That is the specific Mitch attribute. The kind of stuff that Jim Miller and others feared he would not do. Not hurt you. No interceptions. No interceptions for Mitchell Trubisky.
Right, and 2 turnovers the week before,
yes,
none there.
Yes, and yesterday, I mean, there were fumbles. But no interceptions yesterday from Trubisky. The decision-making to throw it away in the red zone at one point to make sure they get 3 at the beginning to go up 3-0. That is better chance to win the game stuff. And that's what we kept hearing. Better chance to win the game, better chance to win the game. You've got, A, his ability to actually make plays like the signature moments we're talking about. There's no way Glennon makes those plays and throws. And then he also didn't hurt you. That combination, I know the numbers are incredibly pedestrian. Understand the handcuffs were there and a lot of the throwaways were willing, but you're seeing the seeds of something that could be very, very exciting.
Right. He has no pass-catching talent around him, period. And he's played 2 really good defenses, and you've been in a position to win both games, and he made the winning plays in the 2nd game. And plenty of people wanted him sitting on the sideline behind Mike Glennon holding a clipboard.
Right?
He is developing.
He is developing. And he's also not hurting them, at least, you know, through 2 games. He's not killing them and costing them a game, which matters to the coaches.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
30 minutes until Andy McCullough, the beat writer for the Dodgers from the LA Times, joins the show. This segment brought to you by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam is clinically proven to relieve leg and foot cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at TheraWorksRelief.com. There was a ton of other stuff from that Bears game beyond Mitch Trubisky that in a normal season and situation is totally worth addressing, and frankly, stuff that I find interesting. Kyle Fuller continuing a very good season when they declined the 5th-year option on him, and now he's a free agent at the end of the year, and what do you do there? But when you have the rookie quarterback that you traded up for, who you drafted, and he has those types of plays, I feel like the big picture stuff and the development of him trumps 160-something yards from Jordan Howard and the Tariq Cohn touchdown pass to Zach Miller and Kyle Fuller and Danny Trevathan and all of that other stuff, because the win in a vacuum doesn't really matter
much. Right, but some of that other stuff, I mean, well, first of all, if there weren't two Cubs games, I think we'd be taking our time and spending all of our and addressing absolutely everything and all the little stuff. It was entertaining, but some of the stuff in terms of being bigger than just a win matters as well. Is Kyle Fuller a foundational corner that you better try and sign before free agency hits?
Man, that's going to be so interesting. And by the way, Jeff Passan will be on the show at 10:40. Just got back to us, didn't hear his phone. So we'll have Jeff Passan in a little bit.
Okay.
It's going to be a really tough decision, because teams don't decline fifth-year options on guys and then sign them very often unless you're going to sign them to a real long-term contract. So it'll depend largely on how well he plays.
Oh, well.
Like, he could play so well the rest of the way that he just prices himself out of a reasonable contract for the Bears.
It's crazy, because I think there have been more moments of, hell yes, that's what a cover corner looks like if this year than there has been for perhaps all of Kyle Fuller's career.
Because it was totally reasonable to not pick up the fifth year option.
But that specific skill set of being a corner and knowing that technique has been just barely present with him. The stuff that got you excited early on, those first 5-6 games, is making plays on the ball that looked more like kind of ball hawking safety or rover defensive guy stuff. Now this year, he's doing cover corner stuff with incredible footwork and technique and timing and ball skills at the point of the catch. It's crazy. This looks like a completely different guy.
The Bears had three, what's it called, takeaways yesterday.
I remember those.
Yeah, I mean, that was the formula for what if the Bears were going to win this year, that was the formula. Outplay the other team on defense. Mm. Not have a quarterback who made mistakes. Run the ball. Now, special teams was a disaster. That wasn't in the blueprint.
You know why? Because my guy Sherrick McManus got hurt. I mean, seriously, you see that dude make every play. He makes every play on special teams, and then all of a sudden he's gone, and you realize, oh yeah, there's nobody really ready to step up and make every play.
Weird game, man. It's a weird game. 90-yard interception return for a touchdown, a kick return for a touchdown, a punt return for a touchdown, a halfback pass for a touchdown.
And with the Bryce Callahan interception return was what, 50 yards, 57 yards, yeah. Something like that?
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was a really, really weird football game.
It was entertaining as hell.
Oh, hell yeah. It was great. It was great use of my time to pass some time until the Cubs came around.
I don't even fault. I have a hard time faulting the Bears that much on the kickoff return. You can hate on me if you want, but I thought Bellamy tripped him.
I did too. That's a 1 in 100 shot.
Right. That's a crazy fluke play.
I think it was a bad call too. I think that was a bad interpretation of the rule.
I think he
clearly touches his leg
one step before the trip though. A full step.
Yeah, but one. It didn't feel like it was two. And normally you've got to, like, do, you know, two steps in bounds, two steps, to, you know, for a football move, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. It felt to me like it was like he hit him, 1 foot came down, then he hit his teammate, and he rolls over him and is down, and then the Bears pull up. I thought, okay, well, then he touched him, and he didn't take two more steps until he kept going. I thought that they were going to overturn that and rule him down.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, is it the NBA travel rule to get 1.5 steps for a continuation play?
That's a
or something?
Crazy fluky play.
Yeah. So, but the punt return. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Kyle Fuller's really interesting though, and Eddie Goldman having a good game, or Eddie Coleman if you're going to listen to Sam Rosen.
Couple of misspeaks from our guy Sam Rosen.
At least two that I counted. At least two.
But what was our over-under?
3.5.
And we'll give him the under. we'll give him the under at SpeakwoodParkinsBets.com. We'll talk to Jeff Passan on how much of this is on Joe Maddon and the Cubs' chances going forward next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
20 runs in 7 games for the Cubs, but 9 of them coming in that weird game 5 of the division series. The offense hasn't been there. The bullpen has been inconsistent. Joe Maddon has been questionable, and they find themselves their backs against the wall, down 2 games to nothing in the NLCS. Jeff Passan is in New York covering the ALCS. We're not sure if we'll see him in Chicago for any of the NLCS, but he joins us now on the Grossinger Auto Group hotline. Find over 5,000 vehicles every day at Grossinger.com. Jay Zawoski posited that Syracuse football finally wins one game and then you start big timing the show. Is that the reason why we missed you at 10 o'clock, Passan?
My phone was on vibrate. I have no other excuses other than, sometimes it just happens. There was no big timing going on. And I have to say, Parkin, you very smoothly and thoroughly covered pretty much the entire series right there so far, because it has been something of a disaster for the Cubs and a disaster of their own making.
When the big guys don't hit, when Rizzo and Bryant don't hit, this team is in trouble.
You know what though, Matt? You need more than that.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry to say, this team was built to survive Rizzo and Bryant not hitting. And that's been, to me, the issue. Because you're going to have moments where they don't. But Wilson Contreras needs to step up. And Javier Baez needs to step up. And whoever they have playing in the outfield at any particular moment needs to step up. And Addison Russell, I suppose, has. He's at least provided some power. But beyond that, this is a deep enough lineup where if Rizzo and Bryant aren't hitting, there are enough guys there who should be able to. And they just haven't.
No, they have not. Javier Baez last year in the playoffs was able to shorten up and make some contact. So far, not at all. Jason Hayward has been brutal. We find ourselves wondering how many concessions to possible offense Joe Maddon should make moving forward, even though Kyle Hendricks, a guy who pitches to a lot of contact, is going to be out there. So, it's time to see Ian Happ. It's time to see perhaps either Schwarber or some of these other guys, because they're just not getting it done.
Especially the way the Dodgers bullpen has been pitching. And coming into the postseason, that's what I thought their fatal flaw was going to be. I didn't really know what Kenta Maeda was going to look like out there. And I wasn't sure I trusted Brandon Morrow. And it was almost a similar situation to the Cubs, where you have the dude at the end who you trust unequivocally and a bunch of guys beforehand who you're hoping turn into something. And even with Carl Edwards, I thought that the Cubs might have another guy like that, but it's been the complete opposite. The Dodgers bullpen has looked like the Yankees bullpen, and the Cubs bullpen has looked like the Cincinnati Reds.
So what do you do if you're Joe Maddon? Because he's got a lot of bad options, but he has a lot of options.
Are you talking about what do you do going forward or what do you do last night? Because
Okay, fine. We'll do it that way first. We'll go backwards before we go forwards. How much of the Cubs' current predicament is on Joe Maddon?
He hasn't had a good series. And I don't know that he's had a particularly good postseason, frankly. And John Shambi and I, from ESPN, whom I respect about as much as any play-by-play guy out there, he texts me after I lit up Joe Girardi following the non-challenge and said, "That's a bad take." I'm like, "What do you mean that's a bad take?" And he said, "This is on the players." And we got into this almost existential argument about how much of this is on the manager versus how much is on the players. And I understand where John's coming from. I totally get it. It is ultimately, like, John Lackey gave up the home run to Justin Turner when he could have induced, a ground out right there. Like, he didn't need to give up the home run in that situation. But to me, the manager's job during a game is to know your players well enough that you put them in the optimal positions to succeed and your team in the optimal position to win. And I don't think pitching John Lackey in that situation at that particular moment was putting his team in the best situation to win. I think that when you put Wade Davis in there, even if it is for one inning, you are delaying the other team's chances of scoring a run by an inning and giving your team another opportunity to score a run. And you know what? If that means you have to end up closing with John Lackey, that's a risk that I would rather take than putting him in there and ending up with Wade Davis not throwing a pitch and having to wait another 2 days when, you know, the question of him going out there and throwing more than one inning at any point in this series, I think, is still up in the air.
I'm with you. I don't think it's 100%. I've been all over Madden for that. Davis should have been there for exactly what you're talking about. And guess what? They pinch hit for Kenley Jansen. So it would have ended up, they would have reached the post Kenley Jansen portion of the bullpen. But this is tricky. Do you use your closer when it's winning time on the road or save him this is Zach Britton territory for Buck Showalter, right?
Yes,
but even though it's a slightly different scenario. It's 7-8-9 in the order. Where does that play for you? Because everybody says that Roberts and the Dodgers are brilliant because they and Madden does this too. They target certain parts of the order. Should Davis have started the inning when it's 7-8-9, or should Davis have come in after Dunson got in trouble and the top of the order's coming?
I think probably the latter.
Me too. Now that might mean that he has to then sit down and come back, or you might only get him for two outs if you're worried about that kind of thing.
And again, it's playing value. It's, you know, Andy McCullough, who's a friend. I don't know if you know Andy, Matt.
Oh, he's on in 10 minutes.
We're having him on in 10 minutes because he said before the series that Joe Maddon will give the Cubs a tactical disadvantage and that he's not a good tactical manager.
Just do me a favor and bring up three letters to Andy, GTO. And ask him to expound on that. And I think it will be a fascinating answer. And anyone who plays poker out there understands what GTO is.
Yep.
I'll let Andy bring GTO to baseball here.
Well, it's funny. I brought up poker the other day in these exact kind of contests because you're thinking about, all right, I just got to do what I can and then let the randomness play out. Well, one more thing about Madden. Four of the last five times he's used a starter in relief, he's brought him in the middle of an inning. Lester last year with a base runner on in game 7. Lackey twice over the weekend in the middle of an inning. Quintana in the middle of an inning in the NLDS. That's not giving a starter his best shot, in my opinion.
You know what, though? I've talked with starters about this, and they all say, yeah, I'd rather have a clean inning. You know what? Just do your freaking job. Like, I don't feel bad in those situations. I don't feel like clean innings are a necessity first. Is it better to bring anyone in for a clean inning? Yeah. But I don't feel like starters are built to not deal with base runners. I mean, if you give up a leadoff single, isn't that essentially like the same thing? You still have no outs and you have a base runner. Like, they've dealt with situations like that before, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I think it sort of sells them short a little bit to say that they're incapable of it. Now, maybe those scenarios play out and they reinforce our biases that say you shouldn't bring in a starter like that. But I think when it's all said and done, if there's a large enough sample, that they do just as well as relievers and runners on base.
Is the industry consensus, as we talked to Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports, of Joe Maddon, overall net positive, great culture manager, below average tactical manager? Is that consensus?
Yeah, that's where it's gotten. These last two postseasons have sort of reinforced that, and it surprised me. I was on Team Maddon great strategist going into last year. It's not just the moves. It's the explanations.
Or lack thereof with last year.
Right. And so last night, I'm in New York, and one of my oldest friends in the world just had a kid, and I'm going to visit him. And he is a management consultant, and he's a huge Yankees fan. And he says, I got a question for you. Why don't managers and coaches understand how to actually manage and coach in-game scenarios? Like, he was really pissed off at Mike Tomlin punting on, like, fourth and second from the 35 or something like that. He's like, they just don't get it. And to me, I almost wonder if there was some crazy owner out there who would take who would do this for a season and find a really charismatic person who also understands game theory and understands optimal plays and understands just what it, you know, playing the percentages the correct way and installing him or even her as a manager of a baseball team and seeing just how big of a difference that would make. Because so many of these guys spend their careers in positions where they're teaching base running or teaching catching or teaching, outfield or teaching hitting or teaching pitching. What they're not teaching is winning. And there's a huge, huge learning curve, I feel like, in order to get to the point where you understand what the right play in the right situation is. And so many of these guys are ill-equipped to do that, and not just ill-equipped, but don't prioritize learning that. And it's a giant skills gap, I think, in managers, and not just managers in baseball, but in coaches across the spectrum.
I think we're going a little far in that direction in terms of making it about Joe, though, because Joe does explain a lot of things well. Joe is open to the conversations with Theo and Jed where they educate him on some of that stuff.
Yeah,
but when it comes down to it...
There's one thing to be open, there's
right.
another to actually live it.
Which is why someday there'll be a GM who's got a headset, right? Or he's got some way, maybe the Apple Watches are so Theo can, you know what I mean? Like someday there's got to be a guy who's got a consigliere down the gangway between the dugout and the clubhouse and screams things to do. But in the end, they throw up their hands and they say, hope the manager does it right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of trust there. And right now, the Dodgers are winning that war of trust, and they're winning this series.
Thank you, Jeff. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, boys. Take it easy.
All right. That's Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. We continue the game theory conversation with Andy McCullough, who I only can assume will spike the ball on Joe Maddon.
Hope you're watching our live video stream at 670thescore.com. It's brought to you by Marvel Universe Live at Allstate Arena, November 2nd through the 5th. MarvelUniverseLive.com.
It's not just Joe Maddon bashing, though I'm sure that will happen. We also look ahead to games 3, 4, and 5 from the Dodgers-Cubs perspective with Andy McCullough next on The Score.